Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to another episode of Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. And on tonight's episode, we are going to be discussing Iceland.
Yep.
All things Icelandic, I suppose. Or more precisely, a little bit about the land, the geography, the people, and also spending some time talking about the myths and magic of Iceland. And although this country was first settled by people starting in the late 800s, once they were there, and there were subsequent waves of immigration, there were a number of beliefs and traditions that evolved there that I would say are unique to Iceland, and a lot of it has to do with the geography of the island. And hopefully most people are aware of where Iceland is located. It is in the North Atlantic, and the island formed starting about 20 million years ago. And it formed through a series of eruptions that built up the land. And these volcanic eruptions occur along a stretch of ocean in the Atlantic Ocean called the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. And this place is where the North American plate and the
Eurasian
plate meet. And if you were to look on a map, like using Google Maps, you would be able to see almost a zipper type of a look stretching the length of the Atlantic Ocean. And in the North Atlantic, this is how Iceland formed.
So if you look at topographical maps and stuff, and this is something they hadn't really discovered until after World War II, the whole Mid-Atlantic Ridge and how the tectonic plates were moving apart in the Atlantic, and because the tectonics and things are moving and stuff, so the plates are moving apart, and they're moving apart. I mean, it's a measurable distance per year; it's a few centimeters a year that they come apart. So if you follow the line, the rift, through like a topographical map or whatever, like Google Maps or whatever, you know, you follow it up to the north, you get to where Iceland is at. And the reason why an Iceland is an island, because it's also over a hot spot. Magma is very shallow there, and there's been eruption and stuff. So it's, as things have kind of shifted, there's been a lot of volcanic eruption, and that's how Iceland formed, was through all those volcanic happenings up there at that point, because magma is very close to the surface in that area. So It's very, the land itself, it's a volcanic island, okay? So it's like if you think about, you know, Hawaii or the Canary Islands, which they had an eruption going on there recently in Las Palmas, Canary Islands, and places that are volcanic, and you see, like, movies and footage and stuff of the islands in the Pacific, especially if you've watched things about World War II, and they talk about Midway and Iwo Jima and Guadalcanal and these islands, these are also volcanic islands. These were islands that were formed on volcanics. So you see the sand, a lot of times it's very black and dark and stuff, and that's how it is in Iceland too. It's a very black sand. The land is dark. The land is just dark in color. It's very black or darker colors everywhere you go. You know, you don't see red, like we're in the East Coast, we're in the mid-Atlantic here, and here into the South you got red clay. Well, there's no red soil there. It's all dark. So the geography is very sparse. There used to be more trees, but the people who settled cut down a lot of the trees to build things because, you know, but it's very sparse. It's very dramatic, I think. It's very, there are these areas where you see these uprisings of where lava has come up and things have eroded away and stuff. So you have like these like edges, like walls, you know, of where lava's come up, and you've got little mounds of things and stuff of where things have happened, and you've got volcanoes around and these cone-shaped mountains here and there, and there's shield volcanoes and glaciers and rivers and waterfalls and stuff. It's very
it is dramatic.
Dramatic. I mean, that's like a word for it. Yeah, it really is. It was very just driving, even like in the quote booties areas of Iceland, as we were driving around where there was nothing around, it's interesting to see the variation of the land. Yeah.
But even though it's winter, it was also surprisingly green. And
yeah.
The land is covered with lots of different kinds of mosses and different kinds of grasses, but in the mountains themselves and these areas of geologic uplift and extinct volcanoes covered with either a combination of snow and some green from grasses and mosses. And in Iceland, there are over 600 unique species of moss.
Yeah.
That tells you a little bit about what kinds of things are able to grow there. But originally, the first settlers that did settle there in the late 800s were Norwegian. And most of the subsequent settlements, waves of settlement, were Norwegian.
Yeah.
Now, the original settlers had stopped by Ireland and picked up euphemistically. They enslaved some Irish.
Yeah.
And brought them along as their slaves, but very quickly thereafter, slavery wasn't really a thing that they engaged in as a people. But because of that isolation and because of the gaps in time between different periods where other groups of people, primarily Norwegians, had gone to settle Iceland up into the 17 or even 1800s, the area the island was sparsely populated and isolated. So as a result, their folk ways and their folk traditions and even their religious and spiritual practices diverged to some extent. And what's interesting about Iceland is that although they were Christianized, and for a period of time, Catholicism was the dominant Christian religion, mm-hmm. that became supplanted by Protestant beliefs. And so now in modern times, most of the people that live in Iceland are Protestant, that follow any religious belief system. There is a large percentage
of... Those who are Christian are mostly Protestant.
Yeah, those who follow a Christian religion would be Protestants. What's interesting, though, is among European countries, Iceland has the largest, as a percentage of their total population, the largest percentage of people who identify as pagan. And specifically, Asatru or heathen. And I'm not sure, mm-hmm. I don't quite remember what they...
No, but there is an Asatru temple.
There is an Asatru temple. So for the sake of argument, for this discussion, we'll say that they refer to themselves as being Asatru, which is probably accurate. I don't know how often the word heathen is used in modern Icelandic culture when it comes to mm-hmm. pagan beliefs. But it is 5% of that population, which, even though the island is small, population is not very large. 5% is notable for a non-Christian population. And again, that is amongst people who have any sort of spiritual practice. The country is or has become largely secularized with their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
But
even still, many of the people who live there, there's still a strong belief. There have been polls and stuff where there's still like over half of the population, you know, still believes in elves and the hidden ones and trolls and ghosts and this stuff. So there are, even amongst the Christian population in Iceland, there's still a lot of belief in the older tales and they still tell stories about Thor and Odin and Loki and all them, because that's a predominant from their from what they've, you know, so that's a base, very base to their culture, very very foundational to the culture there, and you see a lot of imagery and representations and symbolic stuff of the older gods, you know, of the Norse gods. Throughout Iceland. I mean, not just the commercially, you know, touristy kind of stuff, whatever, but you see them in other places and names of things. And
right.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. At least that's what we saw on our week. We were there for a week, so we didn't see everything. We were only there for a week. You kind of need a month, really, you need a lot more time. We felt we needed a lot more time there. We were there for a week, and it was an exciting, awesome, great time, and we highly recommend if you have the chance of going, to go. And we'll definitely there'll be recommendations for things throughout the course of this conversation.
Right. Yeah, definitely. 1 week was not enough. We discovered, of course, you know, everybody has limits as to how long they can get away with staying in another country to explore it with, you know, those pesky things of having to, you know, work at your job and pay bills and all those annoying things. But we could have stayed longer, for sure. And
Couldn't afford to. But we wanted to.
One of the things that we did, was it like the second day that we were there? We did the tour.
Yeah.
So we did this walking tour in Reykjavik. That is the capital of the country. It is 100,000+.
Yeah.
It is small by U.S. standards, but I was surprised at how much the area sprawled as a city.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, there are, like, high-rise buildings in the downtown area. There are some high-rise buildings for, like, office buildings and business stuff, but not a lot, and they're not extremely high. So, you know, I think, you know, maybe... their high rise in, okay, so we live in the D.C. metro area, so they would be high rise in D.C. metro standards of no more than about 10 or 15 stories. I don't recall seeing any buildings more than about 10 or 15 stories, and part of that is probably because, you know, the earth tends to move there once in a while, so you don't want super tall buildings. You know, you wouldn't want a 50-story building someplace that is extremely seismically active.
Right.
You know, and there's, you know, what can the land support and everything else. So there was a lot more, instead of going up, like in U.S. cities, like I think like New York, Chicago, L.A., you know, where things, the people are high. You know, there's a lot of vertical development. And there, it's more spread out. It was. That was cool. That was a good, yeah.
The other thing is that, you know, once you leave the city and the quote-unquote city limits,
mm-hmm.
you are away from that city population. So the change in the geography and the geology does change pretty quickly. So we did this tour, and it was in the downtown area, and in the downtown area where there's the main shopping centers
mm-hmm.
and restaurants,
businesses
and some of the businesses.
Yeah.
The Rainbow Street. We were taken on this walking tour, and it was surprising how much that within the city have these obvious folk
connections yeah.
of the hidden people and elves and trolls and even references to Odin.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that our tour guide, it was really cool because it's winter. There are fewer tourists there, and for this particular tour, it was
just us
and the tour guide.
So it was like a private tour,
it
and you
really
can book
was.
A private tour. They cost more, but for us, I mean, we paid for a regular tour, so there could be up to like 8 or 12 people, but it was just the two of us and the tour guide. So it was a lot more interaction with our guide and a lot more conversation and stuff. That worked out. So, I mean, December is a great time because there's not as many tourists around. We did see the other, I think we saw him another day where he was meeting another group, but it was like two or three people.
Yeah,
you know,
just
there,
a few people.
You know, really, yeah. And we saw another walking tour where there was like maybe four or five people in the tour. You know, so there was a lot of that. So if you want like nice, individualized, small group kind of stuff, you sign up for a tour that could have up to 12 people or so, but you might only be like three or four of you. There were eight of us on the ice on the glacier tour.
Yeah.
And that could be up to 10 or 12.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are probably even more with some of those ice cave tours.
Well, they only fit someone in a vehicle.
Right.
Yeah.
So they have different tours, probably different tour sizes at different times of the year and whatnot. Also related to the length of time of the particular tour.
Yeah. But it's cool. So, yeah, he had a really good time. There was a lot of stories that he was, I mean, just walking around downtown Reykjavik, I mean, he told us, you know, there were a lot of good stories. And he took us up past the big cathedral, not the one that everybody thinks of when you think of big church in Reykjavik in Iceland. Everybody thinks of the one that looks like the big tall one, right, that's in the middle of the city. It was really beautiful, really cool to see. And our apartment was just a few blocks from there. We could see it from our apartment, from the street. But there's also a big Catholic cathedral there, too.
Right. It's much older, several hundred years old, and, again, it's made out of this very dark stone because it's a volcanic.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the rock is the very heavy, hard, black, basalt-based stone, and that's what this old cathedral was made out of. And close to that is the oldest cemetery in Reykjavik, and there's a whole story with that. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But amongst other things, the tour guide talked about Odin and Yggdrasil,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, for those who follow or know anything about Norse mythology and the Norse path, Yggdrasil is the world tree, and it was believed that this one particular tree, which is the oldest tree in Reykjavik,
yeah,
was seen as like the Yggdrasil, or, you know, obviously
connected to Yggdrasil, yeah.
Yeah, because it's the oldest tree in the city, and which is an amazing, you would not think about it otherwise if we were in the U.S., because the tree did not look terribly old, but if you look back at the history of the island and the waves of settlement of the people, the island was originally covered with maybe 20-ish percent trees. And with the first wave and then subsequent waves of settlement, within probably just a couple hundred years, it had been, the island had been severely deforested.
Yeah.
So to see big old trees is really uncommon. And this one was a few hundred years old. I mean, it was a decent sized tree.
Yeah.
Have we seen larger in the U.S.? Yes, but it's impressive for that place.
And the fact that it is an area where a lot of trees were cut down for wood to make houses and other things and stuff like that it was spared and still there.
Yeah, and one of the things that is really interesting about the culture is this understanding of and interweaving of these underpinnings of Norse beliefs and beliefs in some of the same main deities we know about here in the U.S. with Norse paganism.
Right.
Odin, Thor, and Loki.
And Freyr.
Freya.
The ice giants. And everybody, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That is interwoven into the folklore mm-hmm. of the island itself.
Well, and it really connects to, when you think about it too, one of the most widely read, known, referenced stories, sets of stories about the gods, the Norse gods, is the Eddas, you know, the Edda. And there's the prose and poetic Edda, the prose Edda, written by Snorri Snorgelson, who is from Iceland. Okay, so a lot of what is known and recognized and taught and stuff about the gods, the Norse gods, was written by an Icelander.
Right.
Because these cultures, because as Christianity moved through the rest of Europe, the older folkways, the older traditions, were put down in large ways. But in Iceland, there was an agreement. There was an okayness between the Catholic Church and the older traditions. So even though they converted to Christianity around 990 or so, BCE or AD, you know, Common Era, CE.
Yeah.
In the late 900s, close to about 1,000, 999, 1,000 or whatever, when they recognized, when they officially adopted Christianity and Catholicism as the religion, there was a balance between that and the older ways. It's similar that we've talked about with, like, in Mexico with, you know, it is a very Catholic country, but the Brujas are still very well respected and honored, and
right.
People go to see the Bruja, which is not a, you know, that kind of mixing of things, and
right.
Sort of like, so the Catholic Church was very tolerant of these older ways and the recognition of the older gods and stuff there too, and the traditions and stories. There was a lot of that. Now, when Protestantism came in, that was much more violent, and it was much more, there was a lot more turmoil with that. Catholicism was sort of like welcomed in, and the Protestantism sort of like kicked in the door.
Yeah, you could say that.
It's kind of how it worked out. So there's that. So like they tell stories about priests and you know, the Catholic bishops and the priests and that kind of stuff, and there's stories about them that are woven into the culture and the stories of Iceland. But you don't really hear stories about the Protestant leaders and stuff. So
No. There's
that sort of a thing. Like when you've got stories about the ghosts and you've got trolls, when you have stories that involve a troll that don't end with the troll being destroyed kind of a thing, but there's a Catholic priest involved, you know, and there's an agreement kind of made or whatever else, and we'll tell you that story in a minute, that, you know, you don't hear about that from the Protestant side. So, that, you know, there was a lot less tolerance and stuff for that. So that was sort of a thing. So there's been a lot of that. But then a few years ago, Ossetru was re-recognized really as
right. As
an official religion, and people really, like, okay, and adopted it and connected with it. And you see a lot of that in the imagery. You see a lot of Norse stuff in the imagery there. You see a lot of Helm of Awe, and you see a lot of the compass. You see a lot of rune stuff all over.
There's rune stuff.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah, and of course all the touristy things, the souvenirs and that kind of stuff, they all
true,
have
true.
All that too, yeah. But still, right, it's pretty cool.
It is, and it's refreshing to see those types of beliefs
mm-hmm.
that are, I would say, fairly seamlessly woven within the culture
mm-hmm.
of the Icelandic people. Of course, we know that that's not the way it happened in other European countries. Especially not even in Ireland and Great Britain and a host of other countries that are part of the continent. Once Christianity made its way through those areas, pre-Christian beliefs of the indigenous people there were squashed.
Mm-hmm.
And only in isolated places here and there do you see that in modern times. So it is really cool to see that. Another thing that's interesting is that the modern Icelandic language
mm-hmm.
most closely resembles ancient Norwegian.
Yes. Old Norse.
Yes.
So the sagas that were written way back when?
1200s.
Right. Icelanders can read them, whereas many other Scandinavian-speaking peoples have difficulty because the languages, Norwegian and Swedish and stuff, have changed.
And Danish
have changed so much over the years that it's more difficult for them to read the sagas, whereas the Icelandic, and this is what our tour guide was telling us, he grew up reading the sagas in the original language because they could read it. Because, you know, the language has stays the same so much. So it's sort of like this, like a point in history that hasn't changed in some ways there in Iceland because of its isolation.
Right.
You know, so it's really, really cool like that. Yeah.
So if you follow...
Or are interested
in a Norse path and you want to connect that from a cultural context, again, this show is going to sound like an advertisement from the Icelandic Tourist Bureau, but it really is a cool place to see. And the other big benefit is that over 90% of their population has been vaccinated,
mm-hmm.
and there's no weirdness about people not wanting to wear masks indoors or any of that stuff. Everybody does automatically, No matter what, mm-hmm. it's not even a question. And it has a lot to do with just the culture of the way the people are as well. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was...
Can we tell some stories?
Yes. Let's talk about some stories. And one of the first things that our guide also talked about was elves and the hidden people. You want to talk about those for a minute?
Sure. And, I mean, some say that some see them as the same and others the different. And he talked about them as different.
Right.
The hidden people and the elves. The elves are more indigenous spirits to Iceland that live in the rocks and the stones and in the land. And you don't see them, but he talked about, like, even now, today, when they're building a road, if there's a large rock in the middle of where they want to go, they'll have somebody come out and consult and basically find out, like, are there elves here?
What was the word, the name of the person? Was it like an elf whisperer or
something like that?
Yeah.
Where they'll get somebody to come out and are there elves here? And if so, you know, try to negotiate stuff. A lot of times, he said you'll see roads where they'll kind of wind here and there and kind of go around large rocks and stuff. Well, they could have moved the rock, but no, elves live there, so you're not going to bother the rock. You're not going to mess with it. You're not going to disrupt it because elves are living there. And there was a main road. Yeah, and there was this main road that they were building, and there was a rock. And the rock has, like, holes in it and stuff. It's pitted looking and stuff because it's volcanic. It's basalt, and it's, you know, it's not smooth at all. It's got holes and pits and stuff in it. Very lot of character. And the rock itself is maybe, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 feet tall. It
yeah.
is going to be huge. We saw it. It's in Reykjavik. So it's not a huge rock. It's easily movable, but there was something about it. So they, as they were building the road, like, hey, there's this rock, and it looks like it, you know, it seems like one that where there may be elves. So they called in this woman who's like this elf whisperer, and she can talk to them, and she can see them. And she went and talked to the elves and about can we move the rock? You know, we've got this project going on, and this is happening, and can we move your home? No. Well, she continued to talk with them and negotiate with them. She negotiated with the elves. And they finally, after some time, like weeks, they gave their permission for the rock to be moved. You can move the home. But they had a condition. It had to be moved to the center of Reykjavik, in the city, in the old part of the city. And there are these houses and these buildings in the oldest part of Reykjavik that's been built up, and these buildings. And they use, so as you look at these buildings and stuff, these older buildings and things, they're made, the siding and the roofs and stuff are corrugated metal, like corrugated sheet metal. that comes from Scotland. Okay, so this the house that we lived in, the apartment we stayed at, was this way. It had sheet metal around the sides and stuff. And because there's a lot of elemental, you know, stuff that goes on in Iceland. There's a lot of wind, a lot of rain, a lot of snow, a lot of wind, and then some more wind, and snow and rain. So these guys keep it. I mean, this is a lot better than having, like, plastic siding or wood shingles and that kind of stuff on the side and stuff. House is a lot more weatherproof than these steel panels, right? So this area where this older area is in the city, there's these homes, and there's this area. It's the oldest section of the city, right? Well, that's where they said, if you can move it, but this is where you have to put it. And that's where it's at. And there's, like, a courtyard that it's in amongst these older houses. And it's right there, and there's, like, a sign and stuff. But that's one of the stories of, you know, the elves and how they are in tune. The Icelandic people, the government and the municipalities and stuff, are in tune with the land and the spirits that live there because they are there. It sounds very...
Animistic?
Animistic. It reminds me of like talking about Native American traditions and things, and some others, you know, where it's not like a child's tale. It's no, they're there. There's elves there. The elves, so they live in this rock, and they're still there in the rock. I mean, there are still elves that live in this rock. It was moved. They said it could be moved. This is where they needed to be, and she's come by and made sure they're okay with where they're at. So that's one of the stories that he told us about on this tour as we're
right.
walking around. Yeah, and that's just up the hill from one of the older settlements that are there, where they have a settlement.
Oh yeah,
museum place.
We didn't have time to go there.
No.
It's actually underground.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's below street level.
Right.
And
it's like going to Seattle.
Yeah, it's like one of
like,
the oldest settlements in
yeah.
the city that they discovered and have taken pains to try to
preserve
it. There, that's the word.
Right.
Yeah. So the next group are the hidden people. And again, some believe that elves and hidden people are the same. Others believe that it is that they are separate. And it is the word in Icelandic folklore is the huldufolk. Translated to the hidden people. And the story with the hidden people is that way, way back in Bible times, in Adam and Eve times, this was after Adam and Eve had children. Now, and this is something I'd never heard of at all, because, of course, this is part of Icelandic culture.
Right.
And I'm not even sure if it's written about even in, like, the modern King James Version of the Old Testament that Adam and Eve had other children besides Abel and Cain and the other one. So Adam and Eve had all these children.
A bunch. Lots.
Lots and lots
like
and lots.
Hundreds
of children. And so Adam was away, and what was the story? Eve had heard that God was coming to visit.
They got the word that God was coming to visit. Dad's coming to town. Right. God was coming to visit, and Adam slacked off. He's like, yeah, okay. Get things ready. God's coming to visit. Eve, get everything ready, clean up the kids, clean the place.
Wash the children. Well, they're little kids, so they're all, you know, they run around, they get all dirty and grubby, and so only some of the children were washed.
Because Adam was off slacking off.
He was off slacking off. And so Eve decided she was going to hide the other children that were dirty and grubby because she didn't want to offend God with dirty, grubby children. God shows up and says, well,
you got something hiding. Are you hiding something? He knew.
And so he said to her, how was it worded? He said that
it was like, that which is hidden.
Oh, yeah. That which is hidden will remain hidden.
Yes.
So from that point onward, the children that she had hidden, with the Icelandic landscape tie-in, even though it would not have occurred there, but anyway, it's kind of stuck in my head now the way he described it.
Yeah.
There's mountains and rocks and big outcroppings everywhere. So Eve hides the children behind the rocks. And again, God knows about all the children because he knows, he sees all. And he told her what is hidden will remain hidden. So from there on out, those children became the hidden people, and they stay invisible to humans. They only show themselves when they feel like it. There are many different descriptions of them that when they choose to show themselves, sometimes they're very small in size. Other times they look almost identical to humans. And so that is the story of
the hidden people.
Right. And upwards of 50% of, this was a poll that was taken just a few years ago in Iceland, that upwards of 50% of Icelanders believe in the hidden people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a similar kind of mindset as with the beliefs around elves, that you're mindful of them, you take great pains to be respectful of them and the places where they live. Now, here's the book.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to talk about trolls. And there's a lot of lore around trolls. And trolls live in caves. They live behind mountains and in and amongst the rocks of Iceland. And trolls are not nice people, not nice creatures.
No.
They typically like to eat humans, including children. And one of the things that are that it's interwoven in Icelandic culture are the Yule Lads.
Right. So the Yule Lads most recently have been very, they call it Santified, more like Santa, where they're like, okay, now they're nice and they give presents and stuff like that. But like our tour guide was telling us when he was growing up, but he was our age, right? 50s. Okay.
No, he's probably a little older than that.
He's a little older than us. He's probably close to the 60-ish, range. When he was growing up, the Yule Lads were not friendly. They were not nice. They were what mothers threatened their children with, were the Yule Lads. And so the Yule Lads are the children of a troll. Her name is Gwila. And she had three spouses, right? And she had three husbands. Now, one of them she ate. Was bedridden. He finally died.
He was
the father of a lot of the children. And then the second one was Guster, but she ate him. And then there was the last one, and I'm not really great at pronouncing this name. Lapaludi. That's not right at all. It's Leppalu. Lapaludi. I don't know. I'm not going to try again because I'm just not good at the pronunciation of this. But anyway, he was the latest husband. And they had, between them all, there were 13 children. Now, when you hear the names, the nicknames of the 13 Yule Lads, you understand, they were mischievous and bothersome and stuff. Now the story is that if children put their shoes out, like in the U.S., what do you do at Christmas? What do you hang for gifts? You hang your stockings by the fireplace, right? Hang your stockings by the chimney with care, and then St. Nicholas comes along and puts stuff in your stockings. Well, in Iceland, children put up their shoes for 13 days, 13 knights, 13 children, 13 yule lads. They each come down one at a time from the mountains, and they do gifts. So you got 13 knights of gifts in your shoes. And if you're bad,
you get a potato.
You get a potato. Okay, if you're bad, which, hey, at least you can eat a potato. Hopefully it's a good potato. It's probably a rotten, really mealy potato that's, like, bad and stuff. That wouldn't be a good potato.
No, it wouldn't be
It would be a bad potato.
It would be like a gross potato.
Yeah, like the one that you left in the pantry for 3 months, right?
Right,
like,
and it is worth noting that some of the folklore you may have heard about trolls, that they can only survive in the darkness, and as soon as, you know, sunlight hits them, then they can, you know, they turn to stone. And there are different kinds of formations throughout the country that are linked to, you know, folklore stories about them being certain trolls. And there are a number of stories about that. But going back to this, the Yule Lads, there's this whole culture. Around the month of December, you see the Yule Lads everywhere. There are little statues. We bought a whole bunch of little wooden
Christmas ornaments.
With the different names, and David's going to go through the different names and tell you what they are supposed to be of and what they're...
Right. So the first one is the Sheep Worrier. So he comes down from the hills, and he's all stiff-legged and bow-legged and stuff, and he likes to come down from the hills and milk the ewes, the sheep, and steal their milk. But it's difficult for him to do that because his legs are all stiff and bow-legged and bendy, and he doesn't bend too well. So he's not happy about that. So he steals milk from the fridge now. And then there's the Gullygock, Gilyager, yes, he basically sneaks his way into farmhouses to steal milk. There's Stufer, also known as Stubby, who's very sensitive about his height, and he's the shortest member of the trolls. And it takes him more time to come down from the mountains because his legs are so short. But he scrounges around the kitchen and scrapes off whatever he can and stuff. So he steals your leftover stuff out of the kitchen. There's one called the Spoon Licker, and that's what he does. He loiters around dark kitchens, waiting for spoons to be set aside so he can take them and scurry back to his hiding place to enjoy the spoon in peace. So if you're cooking something and you set your spoon down and you turn away and you come back and you can't find your spoon around Yule, because he came down and stole your spoon, the spoon licker. And then there's Pot Licker, who does the same thing. He comes down and steals your pots so you can lick the remains out of the bottom of the pots.
But isn't there also a Pot Scraper?
There is. Then there's Bowl Licker, okay, who does the same. He'll steal your bowls and eat the stuff out of your bowls. There's Door Slammer, who runs around your home slamming doors and, you know, and messing with your doors. Then there's the Skyr Glutton. Now, Skyr, S-K-Y-R, Skyr is Icelandic yogurt, and it's something they've made there for forever. And it's a type of yogurt. It's almost more categorized like a cheese because of how it's made. We had some. It's good. I'm not a big yogurt fan. I like it. So it's kind of thick and substantial. Lots of good protein in it, and all this stuff is really tasty, but it is very Icelandic. So this guy comes in and steals your Skyr Glutton. And then there's the Sausage Stealer, who, you know, after you make your sausages, you hang them in the rafters to dry, and your home is, you know, heated by smoke and, you know, from the fire and stuff, so you hang it, so it's kind of smoked and stuff, and then you hang them up. Well, he comes and steals your sausages. There's one who steals your sausages. There's the Window Peeper, and guess what he does? He has glasses, so he can see really well through your windows. And he pulls funny faces to make himself look scary, and he he messes with the children. He tries to scare the children and stuff through the windows. So if they see him, he makes funny faces to scare the children. There's Door Sniffer, who sniffs around for your cakes. He'll steal your cakes. If he smells your cakes, he'll steal your cakes. There's Meat Hook, who steals the meat you have hanging from your rafters. So there are a bunch of little thieving children. Candle Beggar, you know, who devours, he eats candles. He'll steal your candles. So those are the 13 Yule Lads. They're a bunch of mischievous, thieving little what's-a-what's.
And what's interesting is that they come down
one at a time.
One at a time, and some of them will leave, quote-unquote, leave before the others have arrived as well. So according to tradition and folklore, not all of those 13 will be down into, you know, the cities and towns all at the same time.
No, it's like to take turns.
Right.
Like Candle Beggar, he eats your candles because back in the old days, candles were made of tallow, which is from an
beef fat,
right? So they weren't yummy, but it was something you could eat. You could eat your candles if you really wanted to. And then they have a cat. They have the Yule Cat. Now, the Yule Cat is a big black cat. He's got spiky, sharp fur and big teeth and big claws. And he's not a cat you would want to snuggle up with. There's actually like a wire statue of the Yule Cat in Reykjavik, in downtown, in the tourist area stuff. If you look up Yule Cat, you'll see pictures of this wire structure that they have downtown that they set up, and they say, the guy said, that's about the size that the cat was. He's about 10 feet tall. He's a big cat, big black cat. Now, misbehaving children, if children were not good and didn't get good, so if children misbehaved and did not get clean clothes for Christmas, then the Yule Cat would come and find them and eat them.
There's a lot of eating of children as a means to keep your kids from doing bad stuff.
Yeah.
It's really kind of funny. The mother of the Yule Lads eats children. Trolls in general eat children. And then the Yule Cat eats children. So part of the culture in Iceland around Christmas time has to do with the giving of clothing so that it's important for you to get clothes for Christmas.
Yes.
If you're a good person, you'll get clothes for Christmas. If you're not, you won't get any, and then you run the risk of
getting eaten
by the Yule Cat.
By the Yule Cat.
Yeah.
Another thing that's really totally aside from this, too, is books. I think I saw somewhere, like, per capita, Icelanders own more books per person than anywhere else in the world, kind of a thing, or something like that. It's amazing. There's a lot of reading that goes on. So the bookstores are very popular, and there's little bookstores all over the place. But that's another thing that's like traditionally given for Yule, for Christmas, are books.
Right.
So you get clothing and books. And
what's the deal with socks?
Oh, I forget. Was there a deal with socks?
I thought there was a deal with socks.
I thought there was a deal with socks. Yeah, there might be a deal with socks.
That.
Yeah.
I don't remember now.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, giving socks is a big thing at Yule Tide.
Another troll story? Another troll story? Okay. So up on the northern part of Iceland is an island that puffins roost at. Okay, there's puffins. And the people who live nearby would go to this island, and they would climb up the cliffs and collect the eggs for the puffins to eat for themselves, okay? And they would go up to the top of the cliff, and they would come down on ropes and kind of come down to gather the eggs. And they had a case where there was one time, and I'm not sure if this was, I forget which island this was, but so this would happen, and they would come down, and they would collect the eggs. Well, as they're doing this, somehow ropes would cut, and men would fall to their death. And somebody else would try, and they'd go down, and collecting eggs, and they get to a point, and they'd fall to their death. The rope would cut, would be cut, and they'd fall to their death. So they called in the local priest and said, "We think there's a devil, there's something there, there's a demon there, there's something, there's something there that's killing the men, whatever. Can you go check it out? Can you go bless this so we can safely gather the eggs?" So they called in the priest to bless the cliff face where they were, and so the guys would be safe when they did this. So he said, "Okay, fine." So the priest goes up there, and he's doing his thing, and he's blessing the cliff, and there was this gnarly hand, an arm that came out from the cliff with a pair of scissors, and it cut the rope. But he was a smart priest. He had another rope holding him up there too. So she cut the rope. The rope got cut, but he didn't fall. And he's like, "Hey." And then, so this troll woman, female troll, this woman troll who lived there, said, "Can you ask him to stop blessing the cliff? Because it hurt. Can you stop doing that?" He said, so he made a deal with her to allow the men to gather some of the eggs, but not on the entire cliff. So the recognition, that the moral of that one, I told this badly, but the moral of that story is that some evil is necessary in the world, and it's okay to make a deal sometimes if it's for the better. It's kind of what is the message that I got from that, is there was this troll, and he's blessing the cliff, and the troll says, "Hey, stop doing that," and he stopped so that she could live in peace. But he made a deal so that the men could also gather eggs.
And apparently,
and
for real, this is something that I think people still do, is
they still
probably
gather
not
eggs
to the same extent.
Yeah.
Because puffins live,
puffins. Yeah.
There are puffins that live in the northern part of the island and the islands.
In the West Fjords and stuff, yeah.
Right, off of, right, in the cliff faces,
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah. Now, the time of year we went, we couldn't see puffins. They migrated. They migrate.
They do.
So, there were no puffins around when we went. You'd have to go, like,
in the summer.
And there are tours, and you go out on a boat and stuff like that to go see the puffins, because they're, you know, and you can go do puffin tours, puffin watching tours. They also, we actually saw puffin on a menu someplace that we went once. So that's part of the local cuisine. Is puffin.
Although it's not eaten.
It's not widely. No. Along with shark and other,
right,
other things too. So that was another troll story, where a troll and a priest, Catholic priest, you know, they interacted and came to an agreement. So this is how they view how Catholicism was kind of working in Iceland at the time.
Right, and not unlike other parts of the world where there are indigenous beliefs that are pre-Christian,
mm-hmm,
where the Catholic Church, and primarily I've seen this with the Catholic Church, although probably to some extent similar kinds of things have happened, where the predominant Christian religion and the grand poobahs of that particular religion, whether it's a preacher or a priest or what have you, whatever authority is part of that religion starts to look look aside certain things and just learns to live with, that they're not getting rid of these folk ways, these folk tales. They are part of the people, and it's not going to go away.
Yeah.
So you might as well learn to integrate it with other stuff. And there had been times in the past when Catholicism and especially later Protestantism was very, very strong, that a number of traditions were disallowed, were set aside, they were not allowed to do certain things, but those practices were relaxed, and over time, again, these folk ways, these folk beliefs have reinserted themselves into the culture. What were you looking at?
Oh, so here's the island. It's, damn it,
Jesus. What's the name of the island?
excuse me. La Trobriand.
And this is?
L-A-T-R-A-B-J-A-R-G. Is the island where these puffins were at, where the priest and the troll interacted and stuff. And the brief story is that that a naughty troll lived on one of the cliffs that would cut the ropes of farmers hunting the meat, eggs, and feathers of the puffins. And that's where the priest went and kind of made a deal.
So there you go.
Yeah. Oh, it's in the west of Iceland.
It's in the west of Iceland. Okay. So that is...
In the West Fjords. Okay.
That is a brief introduction to elves and trolls. We didn't even get to ghosts. And interestingly, ghost stories and a belief in ghosts is also part of the fabric of Iceland. And maybe we'll save that for Samhain or something.
Oh, yeah. We'll tell the ghost story about the deacon of Dark River.
That's right. So... would like to thank everybody who...
Oh, and the wizard, and the wizard who tried to invade Iceland on the behalf of the king.
Oh. Yes. All kinds of other folk stories and magical stuff that are interwoven into this very interesting place. Again, I'd like to thank everyone listening now and in the future. I'd like to thank our CSNP podcasting team, of course, Reverend Selena Fox, Reverend Laura Gonzalez, Reverend Deborah Rose, our Paganos del Mundo team of podcasters for the excellent work that they do.
Reverend Casey Pope.
And Reverend Casey Pope, who does some of our social media stuff, as does Laura. She does all of our Facebook social media stuff. and, of course, Circle Sanctuary for allowing us and the other podcasters to have original, unique, hopefully interesting programming available for everyone. And what do we have going on in the next,
and Juliana.
Oh, yeah, and Juliana, who also, helps with that as well.
Uh-huh.
Coming up, here we go.
Boop. At Circle. What's happening at Circle?
Well, actually, I was going to talk about upcoming shows. Let's see. We've got, Nature... Mystic, that's the encore presentations
Sunday nights.
On Sunday nights. January 9th, coming up this Sunday, is celebrations around the Wheel of the Year.
Mm-hmm. It's an encore from 2017.
And January 16th is the ritual use of candles, because coming up, February is right around the corner with Imbolc. January 23rd show is Bridges of the Sacred Waters, which is a really cool show. And then January 30th will be an Imbolc Bridget Night Healing Ritual. On Lunatic Mondays, we've got January 10th, next Monday, is Victoria Constantino, and on January 17th is a social justice series that she's got going on. January 24th on Lunatic Mondays is
Phyllis Kurok.
Phyllis Kurok.
And Mara Starling on the 31st.
Right, the very last day of January. And then Deborah Rose has author Opal Luna on January 18th. So those are just a few of the shows coming up. And stay tuned for our shows coming up next month, also on the 18th is my...
Ritual?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Two
no, from, sorry.
2 weeks from today.
Yeah. It's January 20th.
Right.
I can't add. It's late. We'll be doing a ritual of self-reflection. It's always a good time at the beginning of the year to do a little bit of self-respect, self-reflection, a little bit of introspective stuff, and then we'll do like a short meditation to help us find some inspiration for new projects, new life goals. We'll get that spark of inspiration going for ourselves for this coming year. So there you go.
Yep.
All righty. So what would you like to take us out with?
Well, I forgot to upload any music that was Icelandic-based or whatever, and that we need to have permissions and stuff anyway. So I thought we would end up tonight with The Ancient Ones by Kellyanna.
Okay.
Because we talked about Ancient Ones.
All righty.
Okay. Oh, and it's also interesting to note that, yes, Icelandic, genetically speaking, there's a lot of Irish there in it because of the
yeah,
of the
two primary ethnic groups are Norwegian
and
Irish.
Yeah. So, it's pretty cool. Go check it out. Go if you can. And we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, and have a great night.
Blessed be.
Blessed be.
Hear a song of time gone by. The ancient ones are calling out, and they sing a song of old, and their words will carry us home, and their song will carry us home. Hear a song. And they sing a song of old, and their words will carry us home, and their song will carry us home. Hear a song.
They call you home.
And they sing a song of old.
They call you home.
And their words,
they call you back,
will carry us home
to the ancient ways.
And their song,
they call you back,
will carry us home
to the ancient ways.
Hear a song,
remember.
Time gone by,
the ancient ones, remember now,
are calling out
the ancient ways,
and they say,
remember now,
sing a song of old,
the ancient ways,
and their words,
it's deep inside,
will carry your soul,
your memories.
And their song,
it's deep inside,
will carry us home,
your memories.
Hear a song,
the ancient
song of time gone by,
they call you home,
the ancient ones,
they call you back,
are calling out
to the ancient ways,
and they say,
the ancient ones,
song of
old, they call you hold,
and their words,
the ancient
words, will carry us home,
they call you home,
and their
song, the ancient
one, will carry us home,
they call you home,
and their words,
the ancient
words, will carry us home,
they call you home.
And their song will carry us home.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming, connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.